This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 21st of December, 2023. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. May I introduce our readers for this week: Heather Bryant.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. So we begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording that you've already received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That is 01962 861229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. And of course, you probably already know that as you listen to the recording, you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen to them again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in your box provided, you can load it onto your own device. And you could also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. And you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio every Saturday at 5 p.m. AWAS Radio is on the DAB channel. You just retune your DAB radio and search for AWAS. And you can listen to us reading the news as a podcast via the Hampshire Chronicle website. So we start with our usual headline stories, the first of which is Councillor lambasts Southern Water, which is going to be read by Heather, please.
A Winchester City Councillor has blamed Southern Water for sewage and floodwater flowing over roads and into people's gardens. Manhole covers have been bubbling up with water and sewage for 5 days in Colton Common, following heavy rainfall last week. Ward Councillor Sue Cook said she has seen sanitary items and sewage floating in the water, with most driveways and the footpath along Church Lane being flooded. Colton Common Parish Council has advised residents to ensure wipes and sanitary products are disposed in bins and not toilets to prevent them being washed up out of manholes. According to Councillor Cook, Southern Water believes the issue is due to a hydraulic overload, but with the rain having stopped, the councillor doesn't understand why it hasn't been fixed. Councillor Cook said, after numerous phone calls, Southern Water eventually sent some tankers on Friday, and they were working all day Saturday into Sunday. And then on Sunday, they disappeared. I have pressured them again to tell them they need to be back here. We have 9 holding tankers that are full to the brim. There are still 2 manhole covers that are spouting water, which is a mixture of water and sewage. We need help now, and Southern Water is not being as active as it could be and should be. It's horrendous. The area is contaminated. All the roads in Colton Common remain open, but signs have been installed to warn drivers to slow down. Kiln Lane by Branbridge Garden Centre has avoided flooding despite being notorious for issues following heavy rain. Southern Water has been contacted for more information.
Thank you. Heather, Richard, please.
Hundreds oppose army base plans. Major development plans for a former army base on the outskirts of Winchester have sparked more than 800 objections. The proposal for Bushfield Camp has proved controversial, with 822 separate objections submitted by Tuesday, December the 19th. The scheme proposes a business park, academic accommodation with 525 beds, a 100-bed hotel and 1,055 parking spaces in a multi-storey car park. The site has been earmarked for a business park in the local plan for more than 10 years. More than half the site would be retained as chalk downland open space. Public comments finished on Thursday, December the 7th, with 13 supporters included. A petition against the scheme, set up by the Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery Residents Community Association, had 1,758 signatures by Wednesday, December the 13th. A wide range of groups have objected, including Friends of the Earth, WIN ACC, the City of Winchester Trust, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, Cycle Winchester and Extinction Rebellion. Oliver's Battery and Badger Farm Ward Councillor Brian Laming has submitted an objection despite his position on the Planning Committee. Councillor Laming told the Chronicle that he would not sit on the committee when it's discussed and would speak in objection. He said the local plan allocation for this site is for employment only. The developer requires student accommodation. This was stated at consultations to comprise 300 single rooms, and now, at application stage, the proposal is for 525 rooms. Needless to say, this is a large increase on a site designated for employment only and thus failing the policy. The developer has failed to show any benefit, if at all, for the city and the residents of Winchester. In fact, the development will detract considerably from the quality of life in the city. A spokesman for the development partnership said, "The plans for Bushfield represent a unique opportunity to create a best-in-class knowledge park in the heart of Winchester. In addition to attracting major organisations looking for new headquarters across life science, media and health sectors, the plans will also open up the disused army camp for all to enjoy. Launched this week, our new website for Bushfield has a detailed frequently asked questions section which addresses some of the recent comments raised and throughout our extensive engagement process. The website is at bushfieldcampregeneration, all one word, .co.uk/FAQS.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
Former mayor accused of assault. A former mayor of Winchester has been accused of sexual assault against a teenage girl at a bonfire night event. Derek Green, 67, of Battery Hill, Stanmore, is due to appear in court over the allegations. According to Hampshire Police, it was reported that a 16-year-old girl was touched inappropriately over her clothing at the Winchester Bonfire and Fireworks display at River Park on Saturday, November the 5th last year. Green will face a charge of sexual assault on a female at Basingstoke Magistrates Court on Thursday, January the 11th, following a postal requisition. Police said he was attending the event in his official capacity as the Mayor of Winchester when the alleged offence happened. He was stood down from further engagements and did not stand for re-election in May 2023.
Thank you, Deborah. My item is headed Sports Store is a huge early Christmas gift. Shoppers flocked to a new sports shop as it opened its doors for the first time in Winchester. High Street chain Sports Direct opened inside the Brooks Shopping Centre in Winchester on Saturday, December the 16th. It has taken over a large unit on the ground floor that has stood empty since New Look left in 2021. The move proved popular with customers on the opening day as they packed the shop looking for Christmas gifts and more. Store manager Chris Bott was busy but delighted with the response to the chain's arrival. Sports Direct is not the only change to happen in the Brooks recently. Yarrow Estates Limited, a consortium of investors led by Winchester-based investors and developers Gentian, bought the shopping centre at the beginning of the year and has since been working with the Brooks management team to secure new tenants. The Brooks has rarely been fully let since it opened in 1991, but with negotiations on the last few remaining units taking place, it is close to being fully occupied. Alongside the sports shop will be a partner stores of Game and USC, bringing well-known brands such as Hugo Boss, Tommy Hilfiger, Lacoste, Levi's and Calvin Klein. Simon Turpin, director and asset manager for Yarrow Estate, says Sports Direct's arrivals feels like a huge early Christmas present for the Brooks, as we've already had lots of people visit to have a look. Their fit-out contractors have been a pleasure to work with, and I'm very grateful to our team of Lisa, Danny, Stuart, Reese, John and Dan for their hard work. I would like to thank all our other tenants for being so kind and understanding during what has been an incredibly busy few weeks. The sports retailer announced plans to focus on opening more larger stores while closing smaller branches in March. The business previously had a store in Winchester High Street, which closed several years ago. Now we move on to the death notices, starting with Heather, please.
Christie, Eve Dolores Rosemary Christie, on the 10th of December, age 91.
Jeans, Malcolm Trevor Gale, Jeans, peacefully on the 9th of December, surrounded by family.
Hunter, Jennifer Mary Rose Hunter, peacefully at home, age 95.
Jeffries, Margaret Ellen Jeffries, peacefully 3rd of December, surrounded by family.
Lipscomb, Christine Lipscomb, peacefully on the 10th of December, aged 79.
Norris, Anthony Michael Norris, known as Tony, on the 17th of December, aged 93.
Park, Patricia Elizabeth Park, lately of Winchester, peacefully at Ranville Nursing Home, Fareham, on the 25th of November, aged 95.
Parsons, Audrey Parsons, peacefully 4th of December, aged 98.
Pill, Anthony Pill, known as Tony, peacefully at home on the 14th of December.
Symes, Amanda Symes, known as Mandy, suddenly at home on the 19th of November.
Turner, Irene Turner, suddenly on the 4th of December.
Wilson, Anthony Wilson, known as Tony the Boss, 3rd of December, aged 88.
Wilson, Donald Wilson, also known as Tony, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, 1st of December, aged 90.
And now we move on to Christian comment read by Deborah, please.
A lesson in what is important. Imagine an alien listening in and watching us all over the month of December. They notice that something big is happening, of great importance to many people. But what might they conclude about this event? After hearing the chit-chat on the streets, on the buses, at the Christmas market, they might think that it was a dangerous, difficult, unwanted season of the year. People are dreading it. They worry about expense, unmet expectations, fights with the family. It is too much work for those who take responsibility for hospitality, food and entertainment. Some people are looking forward to it, but is that just acquisitiveness? We can all get carried away with seeing Christmas as a mountain to climb and concentrating on the hard bits. And yes, someone is going to have to make sure that there is a lovely dinner on the table, that we don't run out of wrapping paper, and that there aren't too many arguments about what's on the television. Complaining about Christmas can almost become a competitive sport. Who has the most guests? The worst cooking failure? The most difficult children? But at the same time, we all know that Christmas is special, that family is important, that the point is getting together, not having the latest toy, whether for child or adult, or trying to impress your sister-in-law. So this year, I'm trying not to complain, trying to say something positive when the subject comes up. It's not a big deal to do, not that hard, but it has good effects. When I'm feeling cynical, I remember a time years ago when I asked my children what they'd thought of our big family party. I had convinced myself that I had not been able to pay them enough attention. They might have missed out. Far from it. They didn't need me. They told me how much they enjoyed having a crowded house. Uncles who were up for a cinema trip or board game. Rules relaxed. Box of biscuits on the coffee table. And above all, Granny to make a fuss of them. They had loved every minute. They liked getting presents, of course, but that was not very high on their list of Christmas joys. It was a lesson for me on what's important. Going to church at Christmas is also important in our family, and also a huge help. It's not a chore or an extra thing to do. It's at the heart of our Christmas, and it gives us a focus and a contrast and a place to express our gratitude and our feelings about the year. The services are beautiful. The church is decorated to within an inch of its life. There are candles and a crib and beauty. But the real joy comes in taking time out from our busy lives, being given a moment to ourselves, to think about where it all comes from, to say thank you for the good things in life, and to ask for help with the bad things. And that goes on all year. If you enjoy carols and candles over Christmas, why not come back another time? You might surprise yourselves. And that was offered by Moira Redmond.
Thank you, Deborah. I think we should be celebrating Christmas, and one of the four of us is looking very Christmassy because she has a blouse with the partridge in the pear tree on, and the rest of us haven't bothered. Right, we now move on to letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. There are eight letters this week. The first four are devoted to the proposed statue of Jane Austen. There are then three letters about the proposal to relocate some functions from the Royal Hampshire County Hospital to a proposed new hospital near Basingstoke. And there's one letter about a book on the Women's Land Army. So, Heather, could you read the first letter, please?
This letter is headed Statue Debate from Brandon Taylor. Despite some muted enthusiasm for the proposed sculpture of Jane Austen in the Close, the design contains some serious flaws. First, her self-presentation is anachronistic in relation to its time. Her body-hugging dress belongs to a much later age, and her alarming stare hardly matches the modest individual that we think we know. Anatomically, too, the figure is peculiar. Her neck has too many vertebrae, and her head is too large for those slim shoulders. More seriously still, she is represented as if glaring at an intruder who interrupts her work, implying that this gives the viewing position required for the narrative moment to cohere. Yet this confinement of the viewer to a single location before the work fails to accord with the work's three-dimensionality is identity as a sculpture, with many sides and angles of view. What will be her demeanour when approached from the side, from the back, or in the rain? Put differently, the artist has designed it, or the commissioner has conceived it, as a narrative painting of the most literal sort, a simulation of the real Jane at a specific or possibly typical moment of her life. I fear the result will look like a crude hologram that just happens to be coloured bronze. I doubt that it will work as a commemorative sculpture at all. This from Brandon Taylor, West End Terrace, Winchester.
Thank you. Richard, please.
And on the same subject, this from Julian and Guinevere Harvey. We agree wholeheartedly with Elizabeth Proudman's excellent letter in the Chronicle on December the 7th. Firstly, we do not wish to have her statue, or indeed any statue, in the Close. After the hustle and bustle of the Christmas market has died down, should we not try to return to some semblance of the peace and quiet of the monastic life that it once had? There's plenty to remember her by already. Her wonderful gravestone, the memorial window above it and the plaque in College Street, much frequented by tourists, where she died. We would agree that the present maquette is a great improvement on the previous one, but it still bears no resemblance to Jane Austen. She would never have gone out without a bonnet, for a start. There's been a great deal written about her over the years, and we doubt if anybody has indicated that she would have gone striding purposefully off into the blue, as depicted by the maquette. Another point raised by Elizabeth Proudman, an acknowledged expert on Jane, is the question of cost. Surely there are far better ways of spending the money involved. What about solar panels on the cathedral roof, for instance? An excellent step to save the planet. Julian and Guinevere Harvey, Danes Road, Hyde, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah.
And the third letter is from John Harding. I have read the article and letters in conjunction with the proposed Austen statue. Martin Jennings is a fine sculptor. Witness his Sir John Betjeman statue at St Pancras. Betjeman was a railway enthusiast, poet, and great traveller, and the placement there is appropriate. However, the proposed Austen statue for the Cathedral Close is anodyne, to say the least. None of us know what she looked like, so the sculpture is pure speculation. The best reasons against the sculpture in the Cathedral Close were provided by Elizabeth Proudman, Chronicle Letters, December the 7th. Elizabeth is one of the foremost Austen scholars in the country, and we should listen carefully to what she has to say. If a statue of her was to be placed anywhere, it should be in Chawton, where she did the majority of her writing. The image you produced on December the 7th of Robert Truscott, a respected local sculptor of significant reputation, is far superior to the Jennings version. It could be placed appropriately, as Elizabeth said, in the College Street house where she died. John Harding, Beggars Lane, Winnall, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. And I have the fourth letter on the same subject, this time written by Geoffrey Moody. As an ex-Wintonian, having lived within 250 yards of the Cathedral Close, I have a great affiliation with that area. Yes, the proposed location for the Jane Austen statue would add an attraction for the author's many admirers, of whom I am one. The statue itself, however, has, among the attributes mentioned by your correspondents, a hint of haughtiness, reflecting perhaps the character of Mr. Darcy. That was written by Geoffrey Moody, Harrietsham, Kent. And the next letter, please.
This letter from Ted Hart is headed Hospital Insult. I thought Flick Drummond wanted to be the next MP for Winchester. She has a strange way of endearing herself to the electorate by advocating the new hospital should be built at Basingstoke and that the RHCH is not fit for purpose and should lose its A&E department. Letter from Westminster, December 7th. The clue is in the words accident and emergency. An event has occurred that needs instant attention and not an ambulance trip 20 miles up the M3, which time-wise is dependent on roadworks and traffic jams. I have worked at the RHCH for over 48 years, and I can assure the public that the clinical staff there will provide the best care possible in the environment they are given. I feel Ms. Drummond's comment that the RHCH is not fit to deliver 21st century medicine is an insult to us all. Basingstoke, the mothership of HHFT, appears to me, as an interested observer, to have their own agenda, and asset stripping the RHCH is part of it. From selling off property to the university to taking away services, e.g. cardiac, to themselves. I understand the idea of centralising services, but Winchester is growing dramatically with the student population and planned housing developments, and let's not forget, we serve the surrounding areas of Eastleigh, Chandler's Ford and Boyett Wood. In my opinion, the best site for a new hospital is the Sir John Moore Barracks. It would certainly be easier for the poorly paid support staff to get to work than a junction off the M3. Ted Hart, Maytree Close, Spurger Farm.
Thank you, Heather. Richard.
And on the same subject, this letter is headed Convenient Site and comes from Jennifer Williams. Flick Drummond MP, in her letter from Westminster, December the 7th, applauds the enhancements which she believes the removal of functions from the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester to a new hospital in Basingstoke would bring to residents of, particularly, the southern parishes. One of these in a location which Miss Drummond considers to have at present little convenient about it, unless you live nearby, and that parking is very difficult at RHCH. I'm very surprised that no one has told her about the excellent park and ride buses. From Bishop's Waltham, I can use the number 69, get off at the Guildhall, and step on a P&R to RHCH. By car, I can use St Catherine's Park and Ride and go directly to the hospital. As for parking at the hospital, I've never had a problem. And what about visiting? The very real inconvenience of a Basingstoke location is not considered in the letter. Not everyone has access to a car, if they do, some of my older friends are not accustomed and are thus unwilling to drive on the motorway, especially in the dark. What sort of public transport links are envisaged? How are people to visit relatives? Or to fetch them home post-treatment? Ambulances cannot be relied upon to make return journeys. How can we expect our admirable care group volunteer drivers to add another 24 miles and time to outpatient appointments? The price of a taxi to Winchester is not inconsiderable, but double it plus time. One last comment. Why only now is there talk of keeping people alive and having expert care readily available? We could have had that in the last 15 years. Consultation is being opened. Let your thoughts be known. Jennifer Williams, Winchester Road, Bishop's Waltham.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
And yet another on the same subject from Martin Pittman, and it's entitled Wise Up. Having until very recently been a senior consultant at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, and having also been directly involved in the advanced planning less than a decade ago, when the healthcare centralisation plans were progressed, wasting the taxpayer an eight-figure sum in the process, I feel very well placed to comment on the plans for the future provision of healthcare for Hampshire. The published options all involve radical downgrading of acute medical services on the RHCH site, including the closure of its A&E and loss of the consultant-led maternity service. They also involve loss of neonatal and 24/7 consultant paediatric, anaesthetic and intensive care cover. The rapidly expanding population of Winchester and its surrounds should be under no illusion as to what life will actually be like. The declared preferred option to build the new acute treatment centre on the previously secured site off Junction 7 of the M3 is a fanciful appeasement exercise. It certainly hardly represents the claimed central option. It would also herald the impossible task of safely staffing a fourth hospital site. Flick Drummond, the current Meon Valley MP, in her published letter from Westminster, Chronicle, December 7th, neglected to even mention future plans for the maternity service at the RHCH. Given the distances involved, would her constituents, or indeed anyone living in or south of Winchester, really elect to drive to Dummer or beyond, rather than access services at Portsmouth or Southampton? I fully support plans to build a new state-of-the-art acute medical facility in this area of Hampshire. However, I believe the vast majority of the brilliant senior clinicians and other current staff at RHCH believe that building it at Dummer or on the current BNH site would be to their and the population of Winchester's direct detriment. This is indeed a once-in-a-generation opportunity. Excuse me. An opportunity Winchester must seize to ensure their future access to safe and convenient medical care. Wise up, Winchester, before it's too late. Martin Pittman, ex-consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist, South Wanston.
Thank you. And the last letter is not about the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. It is headed Women's Land Army Book Plea. This is written by Dr. John Lander. November 2025 will mark the 75th anniversary of the final demobilisation of the Women's Land Army in 1950. In advance of that, I'm writing the history of the substantial involvement that Hampshire's land girls made in the successful efforts to maintain food production when large numbers of Hampshire's male farm employees were serving in the armed forces. I'm particularly keen to make contact with descendants of family members who were members of the Land Army in Hampshire between 1915 and its disbandment in November 1919. I'd be grateful for recollections and photographs for inclusion in the book that is planned to be published towards the end of next year. My email address is j&plander, L-A-N-D-E-R, at btinternet.com. And that was written by Dr. John Lander of Gravel Lane, Barton Stacey. Well, that's the end of the letters. If you have an option or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836, or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or write on paper and put it in an envelope with a stamp right to the editor of 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we go on to editorial comment to be read by Richard, please.
City is no longer a football cold bed. A former chairman of Winchester City Football Club once described the city as a football cold bed. The description was around the time that the club won the FA Vase, one of the major trophies in the non-league game. 20 years have since passed, and that flippant dismissal is increasingly outdated. The men's team are doing well in the Southern Premier League, the seventh tier of English football. The ladies and girls teams are amongst the biggest clubs in the county. Hundreds of girls are members of the Winchester City Flyers, based in Highcliffe. The City Council has seen the opportunity to nurture grassroots sport and agreed to inject £100,000 on top of a previous grant of £200,000 to help fund the club's artificial football pitch at Abbots Barton. The Football Foundation has agreed in principle to provide a substantial grant towards the expected cost of £1.4 million, with a decision likely in January next year. This is excellent news. Council leader Martin Todd said, "This presents a huge opportunity for people to do more physical activity. This will encourage a higher participation in women's and girls' football, as well as older people and disabled football. It's a real fillip for the community."
Thank you, Richard. Now, in the letters, you probably remember that there was some reference to a letter from Westminster, and we're going to read the letter from Westminster now, please.
This is Steve Bryan's letter, and does the subject is the hospital. "My constituents will now be aware of plans for a new hospital between Winchester and Basingstoke and the implications for acute services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Those proposals, out for consultation until March the 17th, mean different things to different people, and Junction 7 of the M3 is clearly a lot further from some parts of my Winchester and Chandler's Ford constituency than others. What we all share is potentially a big change to the way hospital services are organised and delivered. First thing to stress, none of this is especially new. From the moment Hampshire Hospitals NHS Trust brought together hospitals in Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover, this was always a reality destined to dawn. The configuration of acute services, what's done best where, has been discussed for many years in various guises, which is one reason why I made the local NHS my top priority as our MP. Details of the many Ask the NHS public meetings I have held over the years, some specifically focused on maternity, others looking only at A&E, remain at stevebryan.com, priority NHS. But it was the advent of the new hospitals programme and the fact that Basingstoke needs a new hospital that gave it real residence here and finally moved the conversation to a formal consultation. On first reading for the NHS in Hampshire to publish details on how it will invest between 700 and 900 million in services for my constituents, it is not to be dismissed, and it shows the silliness of those claiming this project is the result of ministers cutting NHS budgets. It is true, this kind of investment gives a once-in-a-generation opportunity to improve hospital facilities. The brand new hospital, accompanied by even more upgraded hospital buildings at Winchester, will enable our NHS to meet the changing needs of a growing and ageing population. Furthermore, it will help our local NHS to attract and retain the best staff, something I know it has struggled with in recent years. In all options being consulted upon, Winchester Hospital would continue to provide 24/7 urgent treatment, a same-day emergency care service and midwife-led maternity services. At present, we have full consultant-led obstetric services on both acute sites. But modernising services across the Trust will always come with hard choices about clinical priorities. These choices are now right in front of us. For more than 15 years, I've tried to show leadership for the Winchester Hospital and the important services it provides. For those of us who actually live here, it has been the place for so many life events. For my family too, including the birth of both of our children. In that time, my view hasn't changed. Winchester is a fast-growing city, and I want to see the A&E services maintained broadly as they are today. If that's to change, we need to know exactly what the new clinical mix will look like so we can make an informed judgment. There's nothing inherently wrong with a midwife-led birth, and if we thought there was, we'd outlaw home births as a rule. But my instinct has always favoured consultant-led maternity services in Winchester. If the clinicians who must ultimately decide feel emergency medicine and maternity services in Winchester could be changed in a way that provides safe and sustainable services for my constituents, it's up to them to make the clinical case. We are listening. Steve Bryan, MP.
Thank you, Heather. Now, I've got the opinion piece for this week, which is written by the editor of the Chronicle, Kimberly Barber. It's headed, Interesting Staff Parties. I know it's Christmas and I'm meant to be writing you messages of good tidings, happy greetings and well wishes. However, it's the week before Christmas and one of the busiest of the year for local newspapers. Throw into the mix that the schools have seemingly broken up a million days before the actual event. That's an exaggeration, they broke up on Friday. Then it's a wonder I can hear myself think, let alone edit 7 newspapers and write a 600-word column. However, here we are. Please forgive any typos, bad grammar and rogue sentence structures. The Christmas frenzy is well and truly upon us, and it feels like I'm constantly chasing my tail, with a vague feeling that I've forgotten something somewhere. Cards? Check. Wrapping paper? Check. Sellotape? Check. Presents? Check. Sanity? However, with Christmas come staff parties, and after being on hold for COVID and then socially distanced, this year the staff do is officially back. And there have been some great events over the past few weeks. Each of my centres held a staff outing: Winchester, Basingstoke and Salisbury. All three were great fun, but all were wildly different, and all of them threw up surprises. In Winchester, we went to the Bishop on the Bridge and had a lovely meal. The staff there were so excellent when one of our party felt ill, though not through booze, I might add. They all deserve a medal. In Basingstoke, we went to the Leisure Park. After employing our first young reporter of this year, we wanted something inclusive and fun, so it was off to the bowling alley and then Beefeater. Both were excellent, and our young reporter surprised us with her unusual but effective bowling technique, now forever known as the Lola Scuttle. Salisbury was probably the most memorable, but not for good reasons. We went to the Ox Row Inn for a traditional Christmas three-course meal. All was going well. We'd eaten our food, pulled our crackers and were enjoying a few drinks when the table next to us found out that we were from the local rag. They were less than pleasant, and for a table of directors, it was quite surprising that many of them wanted to have an actual fight with a local newspaper. They were upset that we had reported on their company's failings. As a major company that the public relies on, we often receive complaints about this firm. And, to be honest, we could write double the number of stories that we already do. We only write what the public tells us. And if the readers are queuing up to tell us about how annoyed they are at this company, then it's our duty to follow up and highlight the poor service. Interestingly, but not surprising, that after a few glasses of wine, a bleak sherry, grown men in highly paid positions feel like they can run showboat. Little did they realise they were just shooting the messenger. No matter what they shout about my reporters, who are just doing their jobs by asking questions, their service will remain poor unless they listen and start to do something about it. There's an easy way not to make headlines, and that's not to do anything wrong. It did raise an interesting point about the abuse that we get in our jobs. It's not something that's wildly talked about in university courses, that taking a reporting job can be pretty thankless. A recent survey of 1,200 UK workers by CV Library on the least trusted professions puts journalists second behind politicians. Third were car salesmen. Apparently, it's our lack of morals. Pardon? Greed for money. Have they seen how little we get paid? Unreliability? Well, probably because we were always working. And irritating nature. Okay, this one might be true, that sets us apart. For anyone following the national PPE scandal involving Michelle Moan, I hope that this has shown the importance of journalists asking questions. She has now admitted that she lied when she denied repeatedly being involved with a company that made millions of pounds in profits from the UK government PPE deals during the pandemic. Despite her lying to the press, journalists uncovered the truth, and hopefully the public can see that by lying to the press, she also lied to them. Now we move on to Belgarum, which gives us an alternative look at the news. Deborah, the first item, please.
Four arrests in tool theft probe. Since August, Hampshire police have received more than 100 reports of vans being broken into and tools being stolen. A 24-year-old woman arrested on suspicion of conspiracy to steal from a motor vehicle has been bailed with conditions until February the 27th. A 60-year-old man from Surrey arrested on suspicion of conspiracy to steal from a motor vehicle has been bailed with conditions until February the 28th. A 26-year-old man from Bedfordshire arrested on suspicion of theft has been bailed with conditions until February the 27th. A 26-year-old man from Buckinghamshire arrested on suspicion of handling stolen goods has been bailed with conditions until March the 1st, and there is a photograph of a large room absolutely filled with tools.
Mm. Thank you, Deborah. My item is headed, more than 12,000 visited Garden Lights Trail opening. A Hampshire Light Trail company is celebrating a successful start to its Christmas event at Sir Harold Hillier Gardens. More than 12,000 people visited the Light Up Trail at the Botanical Gardens near Romsey over the opening weekend. Co-directors Libby Battaglia and Lucinda Croft said, "The sighs at night are definitely happy ones, as the public reaction has been overwhelmingly positive. We are so happy for our artists and everyone who's worked so hard to make this year's event extra special." Joseph Baker Martin from Alton went with his parents. He said, "What a lovely, wonderful walk on a cold night. I love the lasers and the sound and light show. Mum and Dad were mesmerised by the projections onto the house. It was all fantastic." Leshin Jolie enjoyed watching the Projection Studios' Song of the Pine installation so much that she's seen it three times. "I just think it's so clever. Such a simple story, but there's something really personal about it." Light Up Sir Harold Hillier Gardens runs daily from 4:30pm until New Year's Eve. Millions of LED lights have been used to transform the gardens in a series of art installations, many of them interactive or immersive, created by some of Europe's most skilled light and sound artists and designers. Food and drink vendors have also stationed themselves at the halfway point in Joy Village to give visitors a festive treat. Right, Richard, your piece, please.
Visitor team goes for gold. Winchester's Visitor Information Centre recently won the top prize at the Beautiful South Tourism Awards. The awards, which took place on Tuesday, December the 12th in Brighton, are organised by Tourism South East. The Winchester team's Gold Award came in the Visitor Information Service of the Year category, sponsored by Services for Tourism. Winchester's Visitor Information Centre is based in the Guildhall and is managed by the City Council. Each year it helps more than 100,000 visitors. The judging saw the Visitor Information Centre visited three times, in person, by telephone and via email. The centre also needed to showcase its commitment to ethical, responsible and sustainable tourism, amongst other criteria. Councillor Lucille Thompson, Cabinet Member for Business and Culture, said, "I was delighted to attend the awards. Getting to the nomination stage of the awards is a feat in itself, and I'd like to thank the team for putting in such a lot of work to secure it. I send huge congratulations to them on their success."
Thank you, Richard. Heather, you've got a... I sometimes call it hysterical item, but it's supposed to be historical item. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes. This is headed, charity shop find sells for £25,000. A newly discovered drawing by British sculptor and artist Henry Moore sold at auction for £25,000. Having been bought in a charity shop for a few pounds 20 years ago. The drawing features four studies of a mother and child, a common theme work by Moore, who was one of the most important British sculptors of the 20th century. The same sale saw a pen and ink drawing by Lucian Freud that had been torn to pieces by the artist and restored to sell for £6,930 to a different private collector in the UK. The woman who purchased Moore's drawing at a charity shop thought it was just a print, but when it was taken out of its frame during a routine valuation at Forum auctions, Moore's signature was found and another drawing was discovered on the reverse. It was sent to the Henry Moore Foundation, and after 2 years of research, four studies for seated mother and child was confirmed as being created by him. The drawing was sold at Forum Auctions to a private UK-based collector and will be featured in the Foundation's upcoming catalogue on Moore's portfolio. The images on both sides were created in Moore's trademark mixture of inks, watercolour and wax crayon between 1947 and 1949. Eleanor Garthwaite, specialist at Forum Auctions, said, "We are delighted with the result of this newly discovered drawing by one of the most important British artists of the 20th century. Works by Henry Moore are always highly sought after, and this was witnessed today by competitive bidding from around the world." Moore was born in 1898 in Castleford in Yorkshire and attended Leeds School of Art and the Royal College of Art in London. By the 1930s, he was one of the most important working sculptors in Europe, but switched to drawing after his Hampstead home and studio was bombed at the outbreak of the Second World War. A mother and child is one of Moore's most recognisable motifs, and his increased focus on the subject is notable during the war period.
Thank you, Heather. Now, just one or two comments about things coming up in the next week. Now, I understand that next week it's actually Christmas. Well, who'd have thought it? Being in Winchester, I suspect a lot of activity will revolve around Winchester Cathedral. On Christmas Eve, there will be carols with the Blessing of the Crib at 5:30 and Midnight Mass at 11 p.m. And on Christmas Day, Holy Communion at 8 a.m, Festal Matins at 9:45, Eucharist at 11:15, and Evensong with Processions from the Tree at 3:30 in the afternoon. And while we're talking about the cathedral, I've got an item here about a future event at the cathedral. It's headed Royal Light Show to Crown Cathedral. The splendour of coronations and crown jewels will be brought to Winchester Cathedral in a new immersive light show in March. Crown and Coronation aims to bring the spectacle and significance of shared experience to life, demonstrating the role of the crown jewels. Following its launch at the Tower of London in November, the show is embarking on a UK tour of famous landmarks and locations. Crown and Coronation has been created by Historic Royal Palaces, the charity that cares for the Tower of London, in partnership with Lux Muralis, as part of an artistic collaboration between artist Peter Walker and composer David Harper. The show will feature imagery spanning more than 1,000 years of history. The projections and soundscape will sweep through the 14th and 15th century Gothic nave, showing images of the crown jewels projected through the detailed footage captured from historic coronation ceremonies. The Very Reverend Catherine O, Dean of Winchester, said, "I'm delighted to welcome this crown and coronation themed immersive light show to Winchester Cathedral." This light show will be starting on March the 4th to the 8th next year, 2024. Right, and finally, before we go on to items of general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 8 a.m. and set again at about 4 p.m. Right, now we go on to items of general news. Heather, can we have the first article, please?
This article is headed "Convict Jailed for Prison Rape and GBH." A man who poured boiling water over a fellow inmate at Winchester Prison before beating and raping him has been jailed for 12 years. Robert Reynolds, 29, had denied grievous bodily harm with intent, 2 counts of rape and a sexual assault. A jury at Salisbury Crown Court found him guilty of all offences following a 5-day trial. The court heard that Reynolds attacked the victim, a man who was in his 20s at the time, in July 2021, when they were prisoners at HMP Winchester, Romsey Road. Reynolds threw boiling water from a kettle at the victim, causing burns to his back and face. He then punched and kicked the victim before raping and sexually assaulting him, the jury was told. The victim was initially treated at the prison before being taken for treatment at a specialist burns unit in the hospital. He later disclosed the sexual offences. On Wednesday, December 13th, Reynolds, currently of HMP Bullingdon, was jailed for 12 years following a hearing at Winchester Crown Court. Speaking after the hearing, Detective Sergeant Harry Wilson said this was a horrific attack on a vulnerable man in prison. While the victim has since left prison, he continues to deal with the physical and mental impact of what happened to him. This was a difficult and long investigation, and hope this shows that we will work closely with the prison to investigate any criminal offences that occur here.
Thank you. Heather, Richard, please.
Sharp rise in drug stop and searches. More than 150 people in Winchester were stopped by police for drug searches over a three-month period, recent figures reveal. Hampshire Police recently released its latest statistics, which cover July to September. The figures show 81% of stop and searches were drug-related. They also reveal that black people are six times more likely to be stopped by police than white people. Chief Inspector Corinne Bishop said, "There's been an increase in the number of stop and search over the last two quarters. However, this amount of stop and search is consistent with the same time last year. The increase in these searches during the latest quarter is likely down to Boomtown Festival over the summer period, where in excess of 50,000 extra people came to Winchester. We've also seen a focus on searches relating to theft offences, for which the majority will be linked to those we know are persistently shoplifting. This has been targeted with the use of criminal behaviour orders, so I'm hoping for a drop over the next quarter. We work closely with our independent advisory group to scrutinise stops, ensuring they are lawful and proportionate. The group have not raised any concerns with our use of the powers. The total number of stops was 203, up from 159 in the previous 3 months. Arrests arose slightly from 16 to 20.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah?
Lollipop Lady's Christmas Treat. A Lollipop Lady has been keeping the kids at Stanmore School entertained ahead of the holidays with her version of the Elf on the Shelf story. Jackie Jones, 64, decorates the hedge outside the school in Stanmore Lane every day in December until the Christmas holidays with a different magical scene. The school crossing patrol officer was inspired to start the festive tradition about 5 or 6 years ago when she lost her hat and it was left on the green opposite the school for her the next morning. One child went to pick it up before Jackie said, "Be careful, there's an elf sleeping under there." And the boy's eyes lit up. From that point on, Jackie has been helping elves, Crystal and Sparkle, every morning and afternoon in the run-up to the Christmas break. Displays have included the elves travelling by umbrella, hot air balloon, and even a rocket ship, as well as a grotto on the last day of term. Jackie, who lives in Valley Court, said, "I don't know where I get my ideas from sometimes. I usually plan what I'm doing the night before. My living room looks like the elves have set off an explosion. I put a lot of effort in. The kids get really annoyed sometimes when their parents are in a hurry and drag them past. Every year I think, I'm fed up with this, but this year, because I don't know if we'll be around in a couple of years, I decided to go big. The kids have caught me before, so I now have a sleigh licence, which means I can help the elves. I video it too and put it on Facebook and TikTok to see if I can give anyone else any ideas. Every year, I buy new stuff. I can't help it. I get as much fun out of it as the children. Even if only one child's eyes light up, it's worth it. Now, I've been doing it a while. Some parents take photos for their kids at secondary school for them to see what the elves are up to. They know it's me, but it's so lovely that they still want to know what's going on."
Thank you, dear. What a lovely story.
Yes. The best story we've had all day.
Absolutely. Big smiles all the way around the table. My piece is headed, "Benefits of Cities' Natural Spaces Are Significant." Winchester City Council manages more than 25 sites important for wildlife, including rivers, nature reserves, wildflower meadows, and even roundabouts. The City Council Health and Environment Committee heard about how the various sites are managed at their meeting on Tuesday, December the 5th. The report stated the council owns and manages sites specifically for biodiversity due to their ecological importance. There's a challenge to meeting the cost of creation, management and monitoring of the district sites of ecological importance aimed at conserving and enhancing habitats and species within the resources available to the council. Sites with high ecological value do not deliver financially, but the benefits are significant in terms of providing natural capital assets such as biodiversity, flood alleviation, air quality, carbon sequestration, localized cooling, and benefits to our health and well-being. The Council's recognition of the nature emergency also supports its greener, faster objectives. Therefore, consideration is required regarding the long-term maintenance and management of its green spaces, with a full appreciation and valuation of these spaces in terms of what they provide, compared with other potential land use types such as residential development. Rick Smith, Service Lead for Sustainability and Natural Environment, gave a presentation on the types of sites the Council manages. The River Itchen, which is a world-famous chalk stream, is classed as a special area of conservation. Winnell Moors Nature Reserve is run primarily by the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust and it is a site of special scientific interest. The Council also manages sites of importance for nature conservation, which include Whiteshoot Ridge in Badger Farm. Councillor Leslie Learney, Cabinet Member for the Climate Emergency, said, "The report sets out what we are doing to protect diversity, which is good for health and well-being." The committee's chairman, Councillor Steve Kremerzan, asked if pesticides were being used. Mr. Smith said, "We don't use pesticides where we don't have to, but we do have a contract with IDVERD, which is our land management company. Sometimes it is applicable to use it to combat invasive weeds."
This item is headed "Pedal Power for a Magical Sleigh." Oh, I wish I could be Mrs. Christmas every day. What a joyous occasion it was as Mrs. Klaus to join the St. Bede's cycle bus from Abbots Barton. Unlike everyone else, I didn't have to do any pedalling and instead had the luxury of being towed by a reindeer in true sleigh style. I and my colleague, Toby Oliver, reindeer number 3, got up bright and early to walk over to Abbots Barton to find my chariot ready and waiting. Colden Common and Twyford cycle bus leader Tony Higginson and his wife Karen had cycled in with the sleigh, music blaring, all the way from Colden Common to make the final bike bus of the year extra special for the children of St. Bede. After a few last-minute checks, we were off around the corner to meet the young cycle enthusiasts in all their festive attire, and I was very impressed. The kids, however, did look a little confused to see and hear noisy Christmas tunes, 3 reindeer and a sleigh heading their way. But excitement grew as we were joined by more regular riders and St. Bede's bike bus leader and founder, Emma Street. Once we set off in the direction of Winchester Rugby Club, little clusters of pupils and parents with their bikes seamlessly joined the group. The atmosphere was pure magic. If I was a kid watching the bike bus glide past, I would be very jealous and no doubt beg my parents to let me join in. And I'm told that the Christmas bike bus had one of the biggest turnouts yet. Due to having so much fun, everyone opted to make an extra half lap around River Park before I and the rest of the team dished out mince pies. Maybe not ideal after having brushed teeth before school, but it's Christmas after all. Next stop, school time. I tried my best to give a big wave to parents and pupils alike. After leaving the kids at school, we made a quick pit stop to South Down Social on Middlebrook Street for a much-needed coffee and chance to warm up. It turns out sitting in a sleigh is not as toasty and warm as Father Christmas makes it out to be. Minutes after we set off again, we thought reindeer Toby was out of the game with a flat tyre. But the incredibly kind staff at Bike X came to our rescue, pumping up the tyre as quickly as it went down. It was a Christmas miracle. Crisis averted, and it was time to parade down the high street and past the cathedral to take a loop around the Christmas market. It was so lovely to see so many beaming faces of all ages admiring the sleigh. I'm used to being behind the camera, so it made an unusual change to have people filming me. My favourite comment had to be when one man shouted, "Where's the Christmas present I asked for 8 years ago?" The stallholders and shoppers at the market were a lot more welcoming, with nearly everyone we passed waving or wishing us a Merry Christmas. After a final photo in front of the cathedral, I was kindly flown back to right outside the office door. Not a bad way to travel to work.
The Richard, please.
And back down on earth.
Yes.
Progress in safeguarding. Hampshire County Council's Cabinet has described what it says is the progress made in keeping vulnerable people safe in the face of increasing numbers of reported safeguarding concerns. Annual reports for both adults and children highlighted that whilst demand for social care continues to increase year on year, the response to the safeguarding of vulnerable individuals has been robust. Councillor Ron Humby, leader of Hampshire County Council, said, "On the surface, there could be concern that the number of reported safeguarding issues are increasing, but we recognise that in part that is due to much better awareness of abuse and how to report it among both the public and the professionals. We've also noted the increasing complexity of cases that are challenging our social care practice like never before, and the ongoing programme of innovation, training and transformation that is having a real impact on the ground. In adult social care, highlighted work over the past year included further development of safeguarding expertise and practice to include new topics such as supporting people at risk of choking, self-neglect, mate and hate crime, cuckooing, where a criminal befriends a vulnerable individual who lives on their own, and self-harm. In children's social care, highlighted work over the past year included early intervention and action resulting in fewer children having child protection plans in place long term. A specialist unaccompanied asylum seeking children's team has also been set up in Hampshire.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
College excludes dance school in cake sale row. A row over a charity cake sale has left a dance school out in the cold and confused as the college where it holds its lessons cancelled its weekend bookings. Roynan Performing Arts, a dance school that offers classes for all ages from 2 years old and up, put out an urgent message to its pupils last week to inform them of a change of venue for his last week of lessons before the Christmas break. The school, which has more than 60 classes in dance, music and drama, usually meets at Swanmore College in New Road. However, its weekend bookings have been cancelled until further notice. The college said it's investigating Roynan, however, refused to confirm on what grounds and by whom. The investigation is believed to centre around a fundraising cake sale for Abbey's Heroes, which Roynan held outside its classes in the car park at the college on Saturday, December the 2nd. In an email to parents, Roynan Performing Arts head Sarah Munday said, "Swanmore College have put forward an extremely serious complaint and I am being investigated. As I'm sure you can imagine, this has come as a huge shock, as we have often held such events at the college and we were supporting Abbey's Heroes, were very closely linked with us. We love supporting charities and the local community, so to be in this situation is very upsetting. Roynan's lessons were disrupted on Saturday, December the 9th, as they were forced to hold the last lessons of the term at the Jubilee Hall in Bishop's Waltham, 2 miles away. Scores of parents were inconvenienced by the last-minute change of plans. However, many remained grateful that the lessons were able to continue in some form after paying for classes, and that did not upset their children, many of whom are of primary school age, some even as young as 2 years old. Swarthmore College's head teacher, Kyle Jonathan, was unavailable to answer questions from the Chronicle. However, a statement issued via his PA said, "The club is continuing to run Monday to Friday as normal. Unfortunately, we've had to suspend operations on Saturdays while the club is unsupervised by school staff due to safety concerns that we are currently investigating." Hampshire County Council said it was not investigating any complaint and that it was a matter for the college to investigate independently with the school. The cake sale raised more than £300 for Abbey's Heroes, a Southampton-based charity which supports children and their families, including bereaved families who come under the care of PM Brown Ward.
Thank you, Deborah. My piece is headed "Shoplifting Increases by 32% in Last Year." Police in Hampshire are proactively working alongside businesses to reduce shoplifting after new data showcases a rise in retail crime by one third. Data from the Office of National Statistics has shown that Hampshire has seen a 32% increase in shoplifting, with figures rising from over 8,000 in June 2022 to 11,000 offences in June 2023. A spokesperson for Hampshire Constabulary said that the force has recently returned to a local modelling of policing so that officers are more connected to the communities that they serve. The localised model of policing, introduced by the force in June, aims to strengthen neighbourhood policing and introduce neighbourhood enforcement teams to target prolific criminals and hotspots in Hampshire. They added, "This includes working alongside local businesses and local partnerships, as well as carrying out dedicated patrols to disrupt offending. Recently, we have shared many cases where those committing shoplifting offences have also been brought before the courts and sentenced for their crimes. We have been proactively working alongside businesses and encouraging them to report these crimes to us so that we can effectively investigate and target our resources where they are most needed. This work, of course, continues in Andover. On the 1st of December, officers from the Test Valley Priority Crime Team conducted an operation targeting shoplifters from the outside of the Andover area that operates within the town." Heather, please.
This item is entitled "Heads Call to Teach Girls Separately." The headmistress of a Winchester single-sex school is calling for girls to have more opportunities to be educated separately. Jane Gandy of Independent Girls' School St Swithin's told the Chronicle, "They need a place to be the boldest, truest version of themselves." Mrs. Gandy said, 105 years after some women were given the right to vote, there are still many areas in which they are underrepresented and where there is a significant wage gap. Just 4% of commercial pilots are women, 7% of venture capitalists, 9% of FTSE 100 CEOs, and 17% of engineers, whilst boys outnumber girls by 6-1 on computer science courses. The median gender pay gap is 7.7%. The reasons for this are varied, but chief amongst them are societal expectations of both girls and boys around subject choice and behaviour. School can be particularly influential. One American study found that elementary and middle school boys received 8 times more classroom attention than girls. When boys called out in class, teachers listened and responded. But when girls did the same, they were told to raise a hand. Another study found that teachers addressed more questions to boys than girls. repeat their comments 9 times more than girls in recognition of their contributions and praise boys more. As one researcher put it, from my research, the teacher does systematic things that can silence girls. It's not that girls are quiet, it's that girls have been silenced. The impact of this is that many girls do not develop the same self-confidence as boys. In girls' schools, we can challenge the stereotypes and encourage the behaviours that give women choices. Our pupils report higher levels of self-confidence and greater participation in class discussions than girls in co-educational settings. They're also more comfortable taking risks. In the world of work, women educated in girls' schools are more likely to apply for promotion or to ask for a pay rise. Girls' schools are successful in encouraging self-confidence, determination, and individual choice, not simply because there are no boys, but because of the attitudes that permeate them. In summary, girls should have the opportunity to be educated separately because they deserve a level playing field and a place to be the boldest, truest version of themselves.
Do you have that, Richard, please?
So many arguments for separate girls' education and so few for boys.
Yes, I always thought that at the same time.
I couldn't resist that. Sorry.
No, exactly.
Museums redesign. A Winchester museum is due to undergo a redesign, aiming to make it a global reference point for Gurkha heritage. The Gurkha Museum's project will be led by PLB and part funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. Dr. Darren Boyer, museum director, said, "This is an exciting time for the Gurkha heritage and for the Gurkha Museum. We're thrilled to appoint PLB as our design lead for the upcoming redesign of the museum. The new space will not only honour the Gurkha's heritage, but also create a more engaging and accessible experience for all our visitors. The Gurkha Museum serves as a repository of the history and heritage of the Brigade of Gurkhas, a unique organisation within the British Army." Jamie McCall, creative director of PLB, said, "This project aligns perfectly with our mission to create museum spaces that tell compelling stories and connect visitors to the rich tapestry of our shared history. We're excited to join forces with our specialist project partners, Pritchard Architecture, Fusion, Martin Thomas Associates and Marbas." Project CAIDA is the Nepali name given to the comprehensive overhaul of the museum's exhibitions, displays and interactive elements. Jim Holroyd, project leader at PLB, said, "We aim to bring our expertise to bear and deliver a redesign that truly does justice to the bravery, service and sacrifice of Gurkha soldiers. The project is set to start immediately, opening for the public in early 2026.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah.
£500,000 to help households. Community grants of more than £500,000 will be used to help Hampshire households with energy-saving kitchen devices such as soup makers, draft proofing and carpeting. The Hampshire County Council grant of £584,000 comes from the National Household Support Fund. Further practical support with the cost of living, such as warm winter clothing, bedding, boiler repairs and food vouchers, will also be available to those most in need between now and March. Struggling families will also be able to benefit from the grants allocated to a number of providers to run free school holiday programmes during next February half term, a period not covered by the Popular Holiday Activities and Food HAF programme aimed at school-aged children who are entitled to income-based free school meals during term time. Groups benefiting from the grant include February half-term food and activity programmes in Winchester, Basingstoke, Eastleigh, Fareham, Gosport, Havant and New Forest, and community cook and eat clubs in Basingstoke, New Forest and Test Valley.
Thank you, Deborah. My piece is headed Communities Celebration. With the lead up to Christmas being awash with parties and festivals, there can be little doubt that the Ukrainian Cultural Association of Winchester may have more reason than most to come together at this special time of year. The Winchester Ukrainian Cultural Association, a non-profit community group formed with the support from the City Council and Community First, held its first celebration of Christmas at the Guildhall on Saturday, December the 16th. Many of the families at the celebration have lived in the community since the start of the war in Ukraine in 2022. Most are women and children who have been separated from their loved ones. But the festival was all about keeping traditions and cultural ties alive and welcoming everyone from the area to celebrate all that it means to be Ukrainian at Christmas time. Adults and children were dressed in traditional outfits and performed songs and short plays to a packed auditorium. The youngest performer was only 5 years old, and the eldest was in her 70s. They have been in rehearsals for over 2 months, and the hard work was evident, as was the enjoyment on the faces of all the performers. Chair of the association, which was only formed in September, Yulia Dubovic, said, "We are happy the Ukrainian community in Winchester has now got a formal voice, and we are able to support Ukrainians in the district and contribute to the local community. We are grateful to Winchester City Council and Community First for the ongoing support and excited about our future projects." Yulia said that she was lucky to have found such a welcoming community in Winchester and smiled as she said that she'd yet to come across a single person who hadn't made her feel welcome. The association consists of almost 400 people, and in the short time since its conception, it has spawned a real sense of community. Not only was everyone made to feel welcome on Saturday, but they also treated to a huge spread of traditional homemade Ukrainian food. The City Council's Cabinet Member for Community, Councillor Kathleen Becker, said, "I'm so pleased that we've been able to support the creation of the Winchester Ukrainian Cultural Association in partnership with Community First. Winchester's Ukrainian community is a vibrant and valued part of our district, and I wish the association every success and its members a very Merry Christmas." The event also saw a Ukrainian English concert, a vertep or Ukrainian nativity performance, a photo zone with Ukrainian attire, authentic Ukrainian cuisine, and a variety of workshops. The Winchester Ukrainian Cultural Association is led by a committee consisting of Chair Yulia Dubovic, Vice Chair Alina Hervernevic, and Olla Roniv, and Treasurer Marina Holovenko. It has a Facebook page where it shares information about events and projects. Please.
Casualty helped off railway line. A person who was found on the railway by Winchester Station was taken to hospital, writes Adele Bouchard. Emergency services arrived at the railway and a bridge in Romsey Road to help the individual to a place of safety. A spokesperson for British Transport Police said officers were called to the line at around 1:30 p.m. on Friday following reports of a casualty on the tracks. Paramedics also attended. The incident is not being treated as suspicious. BTP declined to give any more details of how the person got onto the railway. All lines reopened between Basingstoke and Eastleigh around 3:40 p.m, but delays and disruption continued till 9 p.m. Romsey Road was closed between Upper High Street and St James's Lane for less than an hour, causing traffic to build. A spokesperson for Hampshire Police said, "We were called to a concern for the safety of a man on the Romsey Road in Winchester. The road was closed for a short period of time. It has since been reopened." A statement in the South Western Railway said, "We were earlier informed of the emergency services dealing with an incident between Basingstoke and Eastleigh. This has now been resolved and all lines have reopened."
Heather Richard, please.
Council to sell Victorian Council House. A Winchester property will be sold by the City Council just weeks after they agree to refurbish another for Ukrainian and Afghan refugees. Civic chiefs agree to sell 27 Eastgate Street, which will attract an expected price of £675,000 at the Cabinet meeting on Wednesday, December the 13th. The house, which dates from the 19th century, was bought by the council as part of an improvement scheme several decades ago. This comes after Winchester City Council agreed to spend £610,000 to regenerate another historic property in Colebrook Street. Number 59 has been empty for 2 years. 27 Eastgate Street is the sixth in the row that the council has sold off. It was previously used as a temporary accommodation for single homeless people. A group of properties at the other end of Eastgate Street was sold by the council in 2007-2008. Council leader Martin Todd said, "As a council, we need to make efficient use of our resources. We need to look at bang for buck. We will get more benefits from selling the property and reapplying the capital elsewhere." Despite selling the property, the council will retain the small car park behind it. Councillor Caroline Horrell said, "I completely understand the rationale for this, but why is this property less suitable for refurbishment than 59 Colebrook Street?"
Thank you, Richard. Deborah.
Groups tribute to source of guidance and inspiration. A Muslim group has paid tribute to a former mayor of Winchester who died of cancer at the age of 79. Chris Pines died on Saturday, December the 9th, at Winchester Hospice after an 18-month battle with leukemia. Winchester Muslim Cultural Association credits Mr. Pines as an advisor to the group. Chairman Ahmed Moon said, "The Winchester Muslim Cultural Association is saddened by the passing of our good friend and mentor, Chris Pines. Although Chris may be remembered for his decades of dedication to school pupils as a teacher and the community of Winchester as both a local councillor and mayor, we will remember Chris fondly for his constant and unwavering support of our organisation. From the beginning, over 20 years ago, Chris was instrumental in bringing our community together, in not only drafting the first and second, but also the latest iteration of our constitution. Chris acted for us as an independent election commissioner for over 23 years, and even till the end was a source of guidance and inspiration. Chris has left a void in the fabric of Winchester that will be hard to fill. May he rest in peace."
Thank you, Deborah. My piece is headed Road Campaign Game Changer. Campaigners against controversial plans to reroute a major road through King's Barton have received a game-changing letter from the Secretary of State. The plan, agreed more than 10 years ago, would see Andover Road closed through traffic and diverted onto Winchester Avenue, the main road through the new estate. It will be triggered when the 2,000 home estate reaches 650 homes. About 500 have been built so far. Mike Slynn, chairman of Kings Barton Residents Association, wrote to the Secretary of State in September to find out if a decision could be reversed. Response revealed that the developer, Carla Holmes, could submit a new planning application without the Secretary of State's permission. A letter from the Department for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities said the planning permission in question was granted by the then Secretary of State, Lord Pickles, more than 10 years ago. While this issue is clearly causing concern to local residents, and while it was originally a ministerial decision, once made, enforcement and implementation of planning permission lies with the local planning authority, Winchester City Council. Furthermore, responsibility for road safety and highways closure lies with the local highway authority. It is open to the developer and the highway authority to seek to vary the terms of the permission in respect to the diversion of Andover Road by making an application to Winchester City Council. It is for them to decide whether to make that application, and the determination of any such application could be a matter for the City Council. Mr. Slynn said, "This letter makes it clear that the Secretary of State's permission is not needed for local authorities and Carla, the developer, to decide to keep Andover Road open to traffic. The Secretary of State's letter is a game-changer, as previously the local authorities and CALA had maintained that they would need to keep the Secretary of State's approval to keep Andover Road open. City Council leader Martin Todd last September criticised the idea of keeping Andover Road open, as well as Winchester Avenue. Having two main roads running in parallel would be an act of insanity in terms of urban planning and traffic planning. You can't have both. That makes no sense at all. At CALA, Thames spokesman said the company has no plans to submit a new planning application. We are committed to delivering our ambitious plans for King's Barton, which has previously been approved following extensive consultation. Heather, please.
Wheelie Great Tracks open for youngsters. After years of wanting a safe and fun space for children to use their bikes, Coldon Common is getting a woodland pump track. Following 4 weeks of construction, the track, designed by Forte Trailscapes, opened in Coldon Common Park in Boys Lane on Saturday, December 16th. The area is designed for balanced bikes, scooters, BMX, mountain bikes and skateboards. Coldon Common Parish Church Council, Parish Council has been working on the project for 2 years after people in the community called for an area for children to use their bikes safely away from pedestrians. Kai Forte, a contractor and UK BMXer, said, "We've tried to create an outer loop which is a bit more challenging and an inner loop which is a bit of a warm-up beginner section. We've tried to make it so there are two tracks on busy days and one overlapping on quieter days." Parish Council Clerk Debbie Harding said, "It all started in early 2021 when we had a near miss at the skateboard park. Some children were playing with their bikes and they were flying off the buns at high speed, having a lovely time, but it nearly knocked over an elderly person who was crossing the green. From a health and safety point of view, we had to stop the kids doing that and realise quite quickly that there wasn't anywhere the kids could go and safely play with their bikes and learn new skills and have fun, because most of the woodlands in the village are protected." Councillor John Boyes was really keen to try and provide something where the kids could go and play. "We had the benefit of residents David Light and Chris Brown, who had been involved in this sort of thing before, who had advised that we need to build something professional because dirt tracks can quickly become dangerous and need a huge amount of maintenance. So they put us in touch with a couple of specialist companies, with Forte Trailscapes being one of them. Most of the trees in there were dead or dying. They were willows, they weren't specimen trees, and they were past the end of their useful life, but there are plans to replant some trees around the trackside. The pump track is open from Saturday, December 16th, with an official launch planned for the spring in conjunction with the Twyford and Coldon Commons cycle bus."
Thank you, Heather. Well, that nearly gets us to the end of our articles to be read this morning. We finish off with a item which is headed "Merry Christmas to all Chronicle readers." We extend our warmest wishes to readers of the Hampshire Chronicle. Merry Christmas. As the year gracefully draws to a close, we take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude for the unwavering support throughout 2023. Your engagement, feedback and loyalty have been the cornerstone of the Hampshire Chronicle, and for that we are truly grateful. May this festive season bring you the joy of cherished moments with loved ones and the magic of Christmas lights illuminate your hearts. As we bid farewell to the present year, we stand on the brink of a new chapter filled with hope and possibilities. In the tapestry of the coming year, may each thread be woven with prosperity, good health, and the fulfilment of dreams. Thank you, dear readers, for being an integral part of our community. Your support has been our greatest gift. Wishing you a Merry Christmas and a year ahead brimming with joy, success and prosperity. And as we finish that, perhaps we can add our own wishes to all of you for a Merry Christmas and a safe and healthy 2024. Well, that's all we have for you this week. Before we go, another reminder, if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to your memory stick. Please put the memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, many thanks to my readers, Heather.
Merry Christmas to all of you.
Richard.
Goodbye.
Merry Christmas.
Deborah.
Bye.
And from me, Peter, goodbye until the next time.